I'm Gordon Griffin.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
John Fredericks Radio Network and the John Fredericks Radio app. Joining us now is Ambassador Ann Patterson is with us. Now, Ann was a former ambassador to Pakistan from the United States, and she was also a former ambassador to Egypt. So these are two pretty key positions. Right now, she's president of the U.S. Qatar Council. And she most recently served as Assistant Secretary of State to John Kerry for Near Eastern Affairs, 2013 to 2017. And she's with us now. Ambassador Patterson, great to have you with us.
It's great to be here, John. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
We have a theme song for you. We played the happy song because you're always in a good mood. You know, I've never talked to you or seen you in a bad mood. Why is that?
Thank you. I've never seen you in a bad mood either, for that matter.
Well, that's true. But you're always in a good mood. Normally, diplomats, you know, they can be a little, you know, what's the word, kind of dour types, you know, longtime diplomats. But you know, you're always happy and upbeat. And that's why I love having you on, because I love upbeat people, especially in the morning, Miss Ambassador.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to Afghanistan and the Taliban. So the president apparently was planning to have this secret meeting in Camp David. With the Taliban leaders, the president of Afghanistan, try to hammer out some kind of a deal. Obviously, the attack that had to fall through. What's your analysis of that?
Well, John, I think the president, first, he did the right thing to cancel this meeting. But I suspect he has no idea how he dodged a bullet on this. First of all, there wasn't really a deal, or there wasn't a deal that had been finalized, and the government of Afghanistan, President Ghani, hadn't really been brought into the whole process. I guess he was going to be brought in Camp David, but actually what I think would have been very dramatic and hugely damaging to the president would have been the optics. I suspect the president's really never laid eyes on these guys. And if you have laid eyes on these guys, it would be a very unnerving situation. I know there's allegedly a huge amount of turmoil in the administration about this, and whether we should be negotiating with the Taliban at all, and whether they can deliver on their promise to not cooperate with Al-Qaeda in the future. I mean, I think you have to negotiate with people that you fight. I mean, that's how wars end. So I certainly don't fault the president or Ambassador Helioslav for that, though.
So can you elaborate? You said you don't think the president ever met these guys, and if he did, he'd be shocked. Miss Ambassador, can you elaborate on that?
So the first time, I'll never forget the first time I was in Peshawar, Pakistan. And again, not to criticize people's personal demeanor or how they look, but it was a fairly shocking encounter for me, because they look really, really different, and they look like everyone's, I think, on how the American press would have played this, they look like Al-Qaeda. They look like terrorists. I'm sure some of them aren't terrorists, but these people are very, very primitive in their outlook, certainly toward women. When they ran Afghanistan for years, it was frankly a hellhole. And I just don't think the president thought through this. He obviously thought he could get these people up to Camp David. He could hammer out a deal. I just don't think he thought through this at all, and he was very right to call it off.
Ms. Ambassador Patterson, would you say that it might have been misplaced hubris on behalf of the president?
Yeah, I think that's probably what was going on. He thought Ambassador Khalilzad was close to a deal. He was going to bring in President Ghani, who was going to come, and he thought he could put the final touches on a deal. But I agree with what Liz Cheney said. It was not proper just a few days before 9/11. I don't know what kind of deal he thought he could hammer out at Camp David. But this is why you've got Ambassador Khalilzad. He was making progress in Doha, supposedly making progress in Doha. You don't do this sort of thing at Camp David. You do it in Switzerland or Doha or Norway or other places like that. The symbolic value of Camp David, much less the White House, is pretty profound. So, yes, I do think it was hubris and maybe just, frankly, ignorance.
Or just not knowing the facts. I know the president thinks he can make a deal with people, and certainly he would like to find a way to get us out of there. But I think what you're saying, he might have been shocked that when all this went down. But let me ask you something else, Ambassador Patterson. So days before this meeting, which would have been historic for the Taliban, they launched an attack. One American serviceman died, 11 civilians. I mean, after that, you really have to question all the judgment, the leadership, who's in charge, what the sponsors are, because why would you do that just before you're coming to Washington? Like, what would be the thought process behind that?
Well, I think the Taliban's thought process, and this was violence is up from the Taliban very dramatically. It wasn't just this last attack and the death of the American serviceman, which fortunately prompted the president to call this up, but they've had a series of attacks recently, and my understanding, at least from the press, is Ambassador Khalilzad has tried to encourage them very strongly to observe a ceasefire. But their thinking, obviously, is the more violent, this is actually fairly common in these insurgencies, the more violence they have, the more incentive the other side has to come to the table. And I'm quite glad that President Trump disabused them of that, because you need confidence-building measures. The Taliban have ignored all of that sort of normal process. You need some kind of ceasefire, or at least a partial ceasefire, to show that they're serious and to show that they have goodwill toward the peace process. And as far as I can tell, none of that's been demonstrated.
We're with Ambassador Ann Patterson. She is former United States Ambassador to Egypt and Pakistan. She served as Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs 2013 to 2017. She's a career U.S. diplomat. She is currently president of the U.S. Qatar Council. So you look at the Taliban, the way they behaved before they came. You're glad that the president canceled this summit at Camp David. And you're also saying that they have no deal. Well, the Taliban leaders were saying in international news that they had a deal, and they don't understand why they don't have one now. So who's lying?
Well, they know better. Of course, they know better. They understand, and I certainly, from what I read in the press, they certainly had the outlines of a deal. They're probably surprised at the president's reaction. There's probably a lot of finger pointing going on within the Taliban movement. And what I do think, and this I may disagree with the president, I don't think the talk should be entirely dead. I think Ambassador Khalilzad should keep a door open to the Taliban, because, again, we all want to end this war, and we want to reduce the U.S. troop presence there. It's been 18 years after all, but we don't want to reduce it in such a way as to basically give the Taliban back a huge part of Afghanistan. So I think the door should be kept open for future negotiations, but it's a good signal. It's a very good signal from the president that they have seemingly blown the negotiations at this point.
So what happens now? I mean, you can't negotiate with people that are blowing things up before they come to a meeting. It also has to hurt the president's confidence that any kind of a deal that he makes could actually be implemented. You know, we had I had a correspondent on, Eddie Iranian from Cairo, earlier at the 7 o'clock hour, who said, you know, the problem is not the Taliban leadership per se, it's their sponsors. But that, to me, that doesn't matter. Whoever it is that authorized this attack, I mean, it's impossible to me that this happened in a vacuum. And so now if you have a deal, they just prove to you that they can't, they don't have even the leadership chain in order to implement it. So there's, why have a deal that they are incapable of being able to do their piece of it? Where do you go from here?
Well, John, that's been a question for a long, long time, how much the Taliban leadership can control their foot soldiers. And I think most people think they probably can, and that the leadership would have been complicit in this attack, or at least certainly has not put out the word to their foot soldiers to desist in this. So where you go from here is that you stop. This is what I suspect will happen. The negotiations will stop for a while, and sooner or later the Taliban will reach out. The real question for me is really the one you're basically asking. If you have a deal, can the Taliban actually enforce it?
Right.
And like I say, that's been an open question for years. If the deal, the fundamental aspect of this deal is that the Taliban won't harbor Al-Qaeda and other terrorists who threaten the U.S., So even if they agree to it, can they deliver it? I don't know. I suspect that's a really good question. So we'll see, but I suspect we'll go into a hiatus right now, and in the next few weeks there'll be some reaching out by either the U.S. or the Taliban. The other thing I think we should do is bring in the government of Afghanistan. They have a vested interest in this. They've shed blood. They've got to be in this process because they're the ones who will ultimately be left holding the bag.
Well, that's what President Ghani said yesterday. I think it was last evening or yesterday afternoon. He said it's up to the Afghan government to be able to execute Afghan peace. Like, you can't have this really brokered by the U.S. So I think you're right about that. I mean, Ghani and the Afghan government has to be the one driving this. Right now, though, it seems like they're playing a secondary role, even though they control more of the country than the Taliban does. So explain to the layman out there why the model got turned upside down in the negotiations.
Well, the model got turned out upside down because the Taliban have always wanted to negotiate with the United States. And obviously, I think, I can't speak for Ambassador Khalilzad, but I think he viewed this certainly as the first step. In other words, you could get a deal with the Taliban because their main objective, of course, is the withdrawal of U.S. troops. But the problem is the people who really suffered in this are the Afghan security forces, the Afghan police, Afghan politicians, mayors, and government. They've been killed in droves over the past 18 years. Casualties for the Afghan police have been shockingly high. So they simply have to be brought into this process as a matter of fairness and humanity. But in fairness to Ambassador Khalilzad, it would be hard to imagine anyone more qualified in our government to lead these negotiations. He's been ambassador to Afghanistan. He speaks the language. He's been ambassador to the UN, ambassador to Iraq. So I suspect that this isn't the end of the process, and there'll be some opening again in the next few weeks.
So let me ask you this, Ambassador Patterson. By the way, Ambassador Patterson, former U.S. ambassador, Egypt, Pakistan, served as most recently Undersecretary of State, 2013-17 with John Kerry, with Secretary Kerry. So, Ambassador Patterson, talks were going well when being brokered by the Qatari government in Doha, right? They were acting as the peace mediator. Talks seemed to be progressing. We were getting really only reports we were getting out of there was progress. The relationship between the Trump administration and the state of Qatar has improved dramatically over the last 12 months, I would say. Agreed with that?
Agreed, totally.
Yeah, totally.
The relationship is the emir had an incredibly good visit with President Trump a few weeks back. So relations are excellent. And one of the things I think the administration's very appreciative of is the Qatari willingness to host these talks, and they were making progress. The Qataris were both generous and efficient hosts, and that's why it's very hard for, why would you leave Doha to come to Camp David except for the president's personal role, because it was obviously a venue, a site that that was working pretty well for the participants.
Well, and then the Saudis and MBS got involved in it. They started squawking about, you know, the stupid thing that had to do with the location, like it shouldn't be in Doha. I mean, this is just more nonsense that, and I know I'm very critical of Mohammed bin Salman. I just don't think he's effective. But I don't know why the U.S. government would have just said, look, MBS, have a nice day. Things are going well. These are our negotiations. We understand you have to be involved in it. But we're not going to not do something because you're uncomfortable with it because of whatever your problems are with your ridiculous blockade in the Gulf or whatever nonsense is going on in there. Why didn't they just stand up to MBS and say, you know, look, Mohammed bin Salman, let's see, everything you've touched so far has gone to crap. You're like the reverse Midas touch of all time. So why does he have a say in this?
Well, he doesn't really have a say. The Emiratis and the Saudis have frankly been jealous for a long time that Qatar has hosted these talks because, first of all, they get favorable reaction from the United States, and secondly, it's sort of an international prestige thing to do. Countries like to host peace talks because it shows that they're a serious player on the international stage. So this has really been going on for months, maybe even years, that the Emiratis and the Saudis didn't like these talks in Doha and have been more than a little jealous about it and wanted to host them. The Emiratis wanted to host them in the UAE too. So And I don't know why we don't get tougher on the Saudis. That's a really good question. The relationship with Saudi Arabia has been historically and strategically important for the United States. But I agree. I think this young prince is dangerous.
Incompetent.
Dangerous for Saudi Arabia and maybe ultimately dangerous for the United States as well.
A very toxic combination of incompetence and impetuousness. That is a toxic duo right there. So I'm suspect of anything he does. And also, I don't know how you have a peace negotiation for Afghanistan in Dubai or the UAE when the Saudis and the UAE are dropping bombs on Yemeni school buses. I just don't see how that works. And so,
yeah, no, exactly, and that's why it's just really a question, in my view, of jealousy, and they don't like the fact that, to put it bluntly, Qatar looks like a stable and internationally important country, and increasingly they look unstable and erratic, mm-hmm. and so they don't like the contrast in terms of the international image. I think that's really what's behind this.
Okay, only other topic on this, and I'll get off it, and then we'll close out with Hong Kong. When the president, after Khashoggi and the whole MBS affair with that, the president said he was not going to sanction them, he was not going to change his policy toward the Saudi state based on Mohammed bin Salman, right? And basically what he said is leaders come and go, and I kind of got that. But he got tremendous criticism from the liberal media, as you remember, tremendous over this Khashoggi thing. Meantime, yesterday, Angus King from Maine, Foreign Relations Committee, and Todd Young, Republican from, I think, Arkansas, Indiana. Sorry. Todd Young, Indiana. Well, they go there and they meet with them, and nice pictures taken with MBS, their Foreign Relations Committee. Not a peep out of the Washington media. Not a peep, not even a story. I had to find it on some obscure site in the Middle East, and not even Al Jazeera had a story on it. It was some site based in England.
I didn't see that either, John. I didn't see that they had met with him. But
yeah,
there's in fairness, the relationship has to be. United States needs a relationship with Saudi Arabia and not with MBS, but what I'm sort of, like you, sort of surprised that there wasn't more coverage in the media of that meeting, because I sure didn't see anything either.
Well, that's why you come on the Godzilla of Truth in America. So even when I could tell Ambassador Patterson about a meeting that she didn't know about, and I know that you're dialed into everything, that's a good thing. That's why we play your happy song. Ambassador, In all seriousness, thank you for being with us. As always, great analysis. Final question, Hong Kong. Did Beijing blink?
I don't think so. I don't know much about China. John, I've never followed China, but it seems pretty unlikely to me. Maybe in the short run, but I would suspect this isn't going to end well for these protesters and demonstrators. It's in some respects a question of scale. So we'll see. We'll see.
Ms. Ambassador, thank you for being with us today. Former Ambassador Ann Patterson, U.S. Ambassador to Egypt and Pakistan, and most recently served as Assistant Secretary of State Near Eastern Affairs 2013 to 2017. Thank you for your time today and your fantastic insight, Ambassador,
as
always. Thank you so much. Always an honor to have you on. John Fredericks, Radio Network. We will be right back. Stay with us.
September 14th, 2001. Americans mark a day of remembrance for the victims of the September 11th attacks. In New York, President George W. Bush tours the ruins of the World Trade Center. He tells rescue workers at Ground Zero just days after the attacks that toppled the Twin Towers.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down... We'll hear all of us soon.
1901.
I am leaving because somebody must leave, or else the fight would not be made at all.
Theodore Roosevelt becomes America's youngest president at age 43. He succeeds William McKinley, who dies more than a week after he's shot by an assassin. 1814. Francis Scott Key is inspired to write the poem whose words ultimately become the national anthem of the United States. He composes the Star Spangled Banner during the War of 1812 after witnessing the British bombardment of Fort McHenry in Maryland. 1879. Margaret Sanger, the founder of America's birth control movement, is born in Corning, New York. 1982. Princess Grace of Monaco, the former movie actress Grace Kelly, dies of injuries from a car crash the day before. She was 52 years old. 1927. Isadora Duncan, the modern dance pioneer, dies in an accident in Nice, France. She's killed when her scarf becomes entangled in the wheel of her sports car. And 1994.
It's not a very happy set of circumstances for me. After all, we're in the baseball business.
Baseball's acting commissioner Bud Selig cancels the rest of the season due to a player strike. That includes the World Series, the first October without that game in nearly 90 years. Today in history, September 14th, Tim McGuire, the Associated Press.
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBO.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman says in a TV interview that he takes full responsibility for the grisly murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, but the Crown Prince denies allegations that he ordered it. He tells 60 Minutes in an interview airing Sunday that Khashoggi's slaying was a heinous crime and a mistake by agents of the Saudi government. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says his panel will hear very soon from the whistleblower at the heart of the impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump. The average U.S. price of regular grade gasoline up 10 cents per gallon over the past 2 weeks to $2.73. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg says that the jump results mostly from a drone attack this month on Saudi Arabia's key oil processing facility. New York City police trying to determine who fired shots that killed an officer during a struggle with an armed suspect. More details at srnnews.com.
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free. Just pay shipping and handling. No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free.
Call 1-800-424-7126.
Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now.
Call 1-800-424-7126.
Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer.
1-800-424-7126. 1-800-424-7126.
The year was 1957, and Elvis Presley began his concert in Seattle, Washington, by asking the crowd to stand for the national anthem. Afterwards, he broke into "You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog," and the crowd went wild. 1957 was also the year that the Boger's family opened their shoe store on Park Street here in Jacksonville. Since then, Boger Shoes has been providing orthopedic and diabetic shoes for thousands of customers in Northeast Florida. Boger Shoes specializes in extra-wide width shoes, and they offer free evaluations and fittings by four board-certified podiatrists on staff. With your doctor's prescription, they can custom-make orthotics in their on-site lab. Boger Shoes also carries many popular brands like Birkenstock, New Balance, Dansko, Nayot, and Vionic, just to mention a few. Good old-fashioned customer service has been the key to Boger Shoes' success since 1957. Stop by 1014 Park Street in Five Points and experience the Boger Shoes difference. Boger Shoes, the answer for hurting feet.
She's kind of a big deal. Some people like to say it's only because of how she looks. She sticks her tongue out a lot. But there's just something about her that makes people do crazy things, like get tattoos of her face or wait in line for hours just to say hi. Lil Bub is a 2-year-old cat, an Instagram celebrity with a following bigger than some 90s television stars. And it all started because she was adopted. You can't buy a best friend like Lil Bub, but you can adopt one. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
Tune in to AM 600 every Saturday morning for the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, sponsored by Frontline Insurance. Find out where those fish are, what they're biting, and how to get them in the boat. Get the latest fishing info on tides, weather, and new products, and much more from the Sultan of the St. John's, Captain Vic Tyson. Start your weekend right. Tune in to the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, Saturday mornings from 6 till 8, right here on AM 600 WBOB. Listen online or get the podcast at WBOB.com.
The John Frederick Show.
Joining us now, House of Delegates member in leadership, Terry Kilgore, Republican. Delegate Kilgore, great to have you.
Hey, great to be with you, John. You are really fired up this morning.
Delegate, the crazies are at the gate. I just want to, can you help me outline the caucus of the corn and the people that if they win the speakership, if they win a majority, and the caucus of the corn takes over, some of the crazy crackpot policies that are going to come down the pike that nobody seems to see, right? Instead, we're fighting on Facebook about Denver Riggleman presiding over a gay marriage in his own district. And meantime, they have the most outrageous policies facing you right up front, merely inches from being implemented in Virginia. Let's start with right to work. They want to repeal that. They say they're going to do a day one. What happens then?
Well, I mean, if we repeal right to work, we're becoming New York, New Jersey. People are going to leave Virginia. Businesses are going to leave Virginia. I mean, that's just a no-win situation. We're the northernmost right to work state. It's got us to, you know, we're back to being number one in business. If we repeal right to work, we're toast in Virginia as far as recruiting businesses and economic development for the rural areas. It's very important to me and a lot of folks in getting jobs to our folks. So right to work is very important. And if that's repealed, and this is where the business community, the chamber, a lot of folks need to step up and wake up. And if that happens, you know, we're you know, like I say, we become New York, New Jersey, California.
I mean, we are number one state in America to work in. This is why companies come here. And unions are not illegal in Virginia. So that everybody understand, I'm pro-union. I grew up in a union household.
Right. But
I want unions. And a lot of my friends are union leaders, and they come on my show. And we want workers to join unions voluntarily because what the unions offer them is in their best interest. And we want them to do that voluntarily, not make it compulsory. Right. That's
right.
What the argument is. This is not an anti-union position. This is
no.
You join it with your own free choice.
Yeah. And see, I came in. I was elected in 1993 when you had reasonable Democrats who would work with you, and you still had Dick Sasslaw, but you had a lot of, you know, Dickie Cranwell, a lot of folks across Virginia who, you know, never even thought about repealing right to work. But that's not the case with what I call Virginia Squad 2.0, down here in Richmond. So we've got our own squad down here who are out here espousing a lot of crazy ideals. And you mentioned the Green New Deal, $15 an hour minimum wage, which, you know, are going to drive a lot of jobs in abortion on demand up to and including birth. I mean, there's just and gun control, which would include taking hunting guns. So, I mean, it's just a lot of crazy ideals out there. But, you know, folks, what they're saying is this will take two afternoons in the General Assembly. You always say this is the most important election. Well, folks, this is the most important election. We're handing the keys to the General Assembly over to a bunch of folks that are going to change Virginia from now on.
Well, look, you called it the Virginia Squad 2.0. You've got, let's start with Delegate Ibrahim Samira. That's a Democrat in the 86th district. And what did he do? He's the guy that disrupted the president's speech with snuck in a protest banner. When we were trying to celebrate, the 400 years in Jamestown, you got him. You've got a communist in Manassas who's going to end up being a committee chairman. I mean, think about this. Hashtag
Lee Carter, yeah.
Lee Carter. Hashtag Commie Lee of the CCCP. This guy is a communist. This is a guy. Let me just get this straight. This is a guy who did a Facebook post and says, if I'm reelected, I will join Antifa. Antifa, he says he's going to join it.
They are a terrorist organization. They are out here committing acts of violence, and it's just, and I call them, anybody who creates, on either side, who creates act of violence should be, treated as such. And, we're going to beat Delegate Lee Carter. Ian Lovejoy is going to do a great job up there. We're going to win that seat. We're working hard to win that seat. Ian's working hard to win that seat.
And then you've got crackpot Mark Levine, a left-wing whack job in Northern Virginia, who basically says, elect us and let's put in Caucus of the Corn. And the first thing I'm going to do is pass gun legislation so that anybody in Virginia that owns any semi-automatic weapon at all is an automatic felon the next day. I mean, these are the things that they're proposing. I'm not making this up. These are
You're not making this up. These are actual bills, actual policies that they're advocating, and you know, that message needs to get out. And that's you made a good point before I went on. We need to quit fighting among ourselves about things that really don't matter, and focus on this election and get and you know, if I agree with somebody 90% of the time, as Ronald Reagan said, they should be my friend. So that's what we need to start focusing on.
This is generational political Armageddon for Republicans, because and we're with Delegate Terry Kilgore, House of Delegates member, Republican, Southwest Virginia area, in leadership. Terry, because look, if the caucus of the corn, Eileen Filler Corn, takes over and they bring these people in, they are not going to vote for one Virginia's nonpartisan redistricting plan.
Absolutely not.
They're not going to vote for that. 13 of them voted against it last time. They're going to get a majority. They're not going to give this up. The whole thing is gerrymandered on their behalf.
I served in the minority. I can tell you what it's like to be in the minority. And they didn't give it up then, and they're not going to give it up if they get the majority. So, I mean, they're just... you know, this is just a ruse. They're not going to vote for bipartisan or nonpartisan redistricting, which, in my opinion, there's no such thing. So,
well, there's a plan by one Virginia that passed the House 87-13, passed the Senate 39-1, but that's got to get passed again to get on the ballot. They're not going to pass that. I don't care what they say. They are not. No. They are going to stop that. So you can forget that. Then they're going to gerrymander the federal lines for Congress to bake in Spanberger and Elaine Loria. They're going to bake those in and manipulate that so they can't lose. So November could dictate a generational shift here. The other thing is, if you don't have any state offices, don't have the Speaker's gavel, don't have the Senate, and that's gone. Terry, now they're not going to maintain that, in my judgment. If they lose everything, you're not going to be able to raise any money going into 2021 or whatever. Nobody's going to be able to raise any money. Nobody's going to give money. All the money is going to go to the Democrats. Look at what they're getting right now. Who is this guy, Michael Bills, and Sonia Smith, his wife from Charlottesville? Who the hell is this guy?
Right.
He's giving out $30,000 to $50,000.
And you're right. You have to sign a piece of paper that says you're going to vote for clean energy. You're going to do away with a lot of what we rely on to make our electricity reliable. To make sure I'm all the above. I'm not against solar or wind, but the wind doesn't blow all the time and the sun doesn't shine all the time. So you have to have gas, you have to have coal. So just to make sure that when you go to that light switch, that the light comes on.
Delegate Terry Kilgore, let me ask you this. If you accept money from a donor, right? Now, it's one thing to go to a fundraiser and, you know, everybody gives $1,000 a plate, or you have a speaker there and you know, they're giving you money because they believe in your overall agenda. Right. But there's no specific piece of legislation. If a donor comes to your office and says, here's a check, and this is what they do. Here's a check for $30,000, 20 for me, 10 for my wife. In order to get this check, you have to sign this pledge. You have to sign this document that says you are going to vote on this legislation this way. Otherwise, you don't get the check. Is that not a quid pro quo or not?
It's very close, because I'll tell you one thing. I'm not signing something like that. You know, that's just, and to think, if this was on the right, if a conservative group was saying, hey, you got to vote this way to get this, can you imagine what the fake news press would be saying about us?
I mean, you can only imagine. This would be on the front page of the Washington Post every single day. But this guy, Michael Bills in Charlottesville, that, by the way, nobody's ever heard of, some hedge fund manager, he can give out millions of dollars of his own money with his wife. It's one thing if he's saying, hey, I want a Democratic majority because I believe in their policies. I'm going to give everybody $100,000 to win, you know, do it. Or if soft money comes in, I mean, I get it. Bloomberg's Everytown USA, soft money comes in. That's independent of the candidates. They want to run their ads under the system we have. They have a right to do that. That is very different. I mean, if Terry McAuliffe wants to come in and give you money because he wants a Democratic majority, that's different. He's not saying, I'm going to give you $20,000. I want you to sign this document that you will vote this way on this specific issue. That is a quid pro quo. They're getting away with it, and nobody calls them out. And you talk about dark money. I mean, you can't get darker than that.
I agree totally, John. And you know, everybody talks about Dominion and or AEP playing in politics. This is far worse. Far worse than any of that, and you never hear anything about those donors.
Sure. Instead, Dominion Energy gives somebody $5,000. It shows up on their website. It's completely transparent. They give them $5,000 or $10,000. There's no document to sign. There's no pledge to sign. There's no commitment to make. It's like, hey, you know, we like what you're doing. We like you to keep getting reelected. You're reasonable. We have a conversation. That's what all donors do. They're not saying, look, I'm going to give you $10,000, but you got to sign this document and I got to put it on file. That's what Michael Bills is doing. And it's nobody will call them out.
Yeah.
Except me. And you.
And you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, look, the crazies are at the gate. This is the other thing they've pledged to do. The tax cut you guys passed that aligns itself with the Trump tax cut. Here's what else caucus of the corn
said
they
did. They're going to take it and spend it.
They're going to take it. And then they're going to raise your taxes.
Next week, everybody will be getting their checks. Their checks will be going out. And, you know, had it not been for the Republican majorities in Senate and the House, that would have never happened. Those monies would have been spent. And, you know, also what would have never happened, we couldn't have kept our colleges and universities from raising tuition. That's the first time in years that has not happened, Sean.
Well, that's going away. The crazies are at the gate. They have crackpot legislation, including getting rid of right to work, $15 minimum wage across the board. Look, I'm in favor of paying people $15. I just want to do that voluntarily. The market is driving that. They want to do that. They're going to get rid of the Trump tax cut. They're going to raise taxes. They're going to do that. Lest we forget, they want infanticide. They want a mother to be able to terminate the birth of their child, according to the governor, even after it's out of the birth canal and on a table in a towel. Governor Northam said that. Kathy Tran's bill basically said, if the baby is coming out of the birth canal and you all of a sudden decide, this isn't for me, no baby. It's terminated, right? That's terrible.
So no matter where you stand on abortion rights, that is barbaric.
Infanticide, get rid of right to work, get rid of the tax cuts, take your guns away. I mean, the crazies are at the gate, and Caucus of the Corn has no ability to control these people any more than the national leadership can have any say over the squad. And so that is what you're going to get here in Virginia. And then they're going to do away with the nonpartisan redistricting. That's gone. And so it's generational Armageddon. And what Republicans have to do, this is my wake-up call. You got these nutbags.
I'm glad somebody's doing this, John. This is, you know, we got to have this wake-up call.
And everybody's got to do it because these nutbags are at the gate. You nailed it earlier, Delegate Kilgore, when you said Alfonso Lopez, House of Delegates member, left-wing, progressive, whatever, in Northern Virginia, said legislation that we have dreamed about doing for 40 years, we're going to get done in two afternoons.
Game, set, match.
That's what we're faced with. So if you're Republican, knock off the fighting. Knock off the Facebook crap with somebody doing a wedding.
Absolutely.
Get up off your butt. Drive to Richmond. Drive to Hampton Roads. Drive to Prince William County. We've got 10 races that are tied that are going to determine who controls Virginia for 40 years. Well, knock it off, and let's get this done. You with me?
Yes. You're exactly right, John. We all need to circle the wagons and get our volunteers from the southwest and south side parts of Virginia and the more conservative areas. We need to really step it up this year.
Delegate Terry Kilgore, the crazies are at the gate. We got to act. We got to act now, and we have to point out what happens. You elect Republicans again to the House of Delegates majority, and they are going to keep this economy going and flowing the right way instead of the crackpot things that are going to come down the pike that's going to make your life miserable. And I'll tell you something else. They'll never fix a road because they don't care about roads. Here's what they care about. National politics. That's all they care about. That's what they're driven by. They don't care about your road or your school. They want the squad agenda. I'm out of time. I got to go. John Frederick's radio network. The crazies are at the gate. I keep ringing the bell. I'm telling you, if you're listening to me and you live in Virginia, Caucus of the Corn is poised to take over. And when they do, people like Commie Lee Carter are going to be heading committees, gutting right to work, gutting jobs, voting against opportunities for people, taking your health insurance away, taking your guns away. It's all coming. You want to sit around and fight with like Denver Riggleman because he presided over a wedding? Whatever. Do it at your own peril. Hey, keep it small, control it all, right? Let's get back into the minority, and then who's ever running some committee in Bedford, Virginia, can feel empowered because they censored their congressman instead of working to stop the hostile takeover, which is what you've got right now. And I keep saying it. Republicans right now in Virginia have no message. You know who their number one messenger is? Me. I've crafted their message because they don't have one. Sitting around and talking about how you're going to fix a road is not going to work in this environment. You have to do that, but it's not going to work. There has to be an overriding message in Virginia. What is going to happen when the crazy people take over? Like Kathy Tran, like Lee Carter, like the guy that did the protest vote in Williamsburg, Jamestown, when the president was there. These people are certifiably far leftists, and they are going to be running your state. Now, Governor Northam is going to come out and say, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm going to come out of my tunnel and I'm going to block all this stuff. No, he's not. They are petrified by the Antifa factions of the left wing of the Democratic Party. They're scared to death. They can't even stand up to them. This is the squad in Virginia. It's squad 2.0. And they're in charge. Eileen Philocorn isn't in charge. Caucus of the Corn is in charge. Remember that film, Children of the Corn, where they all come out of the weeds? And it's like, oh my God, what just happened? That's what you're going to get in January of 2020. If you don't wake up. I tell you what really got me. And this is, I know this is why you tuned me in, because I tell you the truth. I'm in Richmond. I got the television on. And I see the first Glenn Sternovit ad. Now, Senator Glenn Sternovit, nice guy. I'd vote for him if I was there. Done a good job. He's running for re-election. He's down by, I don't know, 10. Every internal poll that I've seen that Democrats have shared with me, he's down from anywhere from 10 to 12. His polls, I've heard, have him even. Well, if you're an incumbent running against somebody with a name nobody heard of and you're even, you're dead. So you got 56 days remaining. I don't know who his consultants are. And I see an ad from Glenn Sturdivant. Now, the Senate is gone because he's going to lose. I see an ad from Glenn Sturdivant, Republican, Central Virginia. And it's him and his kids eating ice cream. And I said to myself, they don't get it. There's 56 days remaining. And they're what? Reintroducing their candidate, eating ice cream with his children? What is wrong with you people? This is not going to get you elected down by 10. Oh, let's vote for Glenn because he eats ice cream. He eats Mr. Softy. Are you kidding me? You got 57 days to tell the people of Virginia what is going to happen if these crackpots take over, because the crazies are at the gate. They're right there. They're banging it. Instead, we get an ice cream ad. What kind of a unified message is that? Tell Virginia what is going to happen if they take control. And hashtag Commie Lee Carter is the head honcho. Right to work, gone. They want Green New Deal. Your health insurance, you like it? Too bad, gone. They're going to put you in a pool. That's what they're proposing. Those are the bills. You own a semi-automatic weapon? Nope. You have to give it up. Don't want to give it up? Meet the jailer. That's what they're proposing. That's what Mark Levine is proposing in Northern Virginia. I am just telling you what the bills are. And who's going to stop them? Eileen? If she's even speaker, she's not going to stop them. This is caucus of the corn. She can't stop these people. This is what you're getting, and I get an ice cream ad. And you want to know why I'm fired up? Hey, Republicans in Virginia have to get a message. And that message is they will destroy the state and change your life. And if that's the kind of life you want, with committee chairman saying, you know what, we need to defend Antifa so they can have defense when they hurl Molotov cocktails at people. And that's what they do. And they come in black hoods and they beat you up with clubs. We need to defend them. That's what he said. I read you the post. I'm not making this up. There's no conjecture. So this Glenn Sternovan ad has put me over the top today. The Mr. Softy ad. I just can't believe it. It has really thrown me for a loop. So in honor of Senator Glenn Sternovan and his genius political consultant, whoever that may be, and to Senate caucus of Tommy Norman, we're going to play this tribute to Glenn Sturdivant and his ice cream ad. Go ahead. Rome is burning. Virginia's losing. Hey, I'm only down by 10. Let's get some ice cream. My tribute to the Glenn Sturdivant for re-election campaign and the Mr. Softy theme. Glenn Sturdivant eats ice cream with his children while Virginia goes down the tube. Do that again. I just you got to do it again. This is our tribute to the Glenn Sturdivant for Senate re-election campaign. Play it again. I got to hear it again. Way to go, Glenn, with that nice Mr. Softy ad, even though you're down by 10 and the Senate is gone. But I'll always remember the Mr. Softy ad from Glenn Sturdivant, the one that put Godzilla absolutely over the edge. I can't take it anymore.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. Online anytime at